1. You will hear a telephone conversation in which Francis Drew asks Mr. Harding about an arts club. First, read questions 1 to 10. For questions 1 to 10, fill in the missing information on Francis Drew's notepad. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. Now listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 10.
Hello.
Hello. Is that Appleton 363?
It is. Harding speaking.
I'd like to speak to the secretary of the arts club.
Yes, speaking.
Oh, hello. My name is Francis Drew. I just moved to the area. My classmate and I, and we'd be interested in joining the arts club, but we'd like some more information, really. You know, about joining and the sorts of activities you do.
Yes, well, what you want's our calendar. Ask at the library. I'll make sure that there are plenty there by Thursday. That's all right for you?
Yes, fine, thank you. But would you mind telling me how much it costs to join?
Membership fee for an adult is £2.50 per year, of course.
What exactly does club membership entitle one to?
Entitle you to? For a start, there's the club events. You get invited to them, of course. They're for members and only, they are free.
What sorts of events are there? I mean...
You'll see what they are when you get hold of a calendar. But, well, there's club evening, for instance, once a month. Usually Wednesdays from 8 till 10.
And whereabouts do you hold them?
Club evenings, the beach pavilion. Do you know it?
No, I don't think I do. It's not near the seafront, is it?
No, up past the tennis courts on Park Avenue. You know where that is.
No, I'm afraid I don't. We'd soon find it, though.
Quite good. I don't know what your interests are. Music. Got any musical talents?
I'm not sure about talents, exactly. I like music. We both do.
Do either of you sing?
Oh, yes. We've both been in choirs.
Well, there you are, then. The club's got a very fine choir. Very fine. I'm in it myself, as a matter of fact. We have practices every Friday evening. And it's no good just thinking of joining if you can't make the practices.
No, of course not. But what's the procedure? I mean, if we decide to join the choir or any of the other activities, how do we go about it?
You can't get into the choir without an audition. As far as the other sections are concerned, members have to apply through the section secretary in the first place.
Yes, right. And the fee again. I've written it down somewhere.
£2.50 each.
And where do we send it? To you?
No, I'm the secretary. It's the treasurer who deals with that. I'll give you his name if you want to write it down.
Yes, please.
His name is Hosegood. H-O-S-E and then Good.
Yes.
Initial P, address 3 Clay Hill, Appleton.
Right, and it's all right to send a cheque?
That's the usual, yes. Payable to Appleton Arts Club. Appleton, A, double P, L-E-T-O-N. Oh, and better put your address on the back as you're new. And incidentally, there's a newsletter out 3 times a year just to keep club members up to date with what's going on. They're sent to everyone.
That's good. Just one last thing. Would you mind telling me what the other sections are so that I can tell my classmate and we...
The players? That's our act group, I've told you. Choir, you know about. There's the gramophone circle, the music workshop, the literary and discussion group. Oh, that one meets in different members' homes. Then there's the studio workshop. And, what have I missed out? Oh, yes, the art talks. That's the lot, I think. Ah, the Film Society. That's the other one. Got them all.
Ah, yes, just about. Thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
Not at all. Pleased to assist. And look forward to meeting you and your classmate at the club.
Yes, thank you. Goodbye then. That is the end of section 1. You will have half a minute to check your answers.
Section 2. Listen to the guided tour commentary and answer questions 11 to 20. You now have some time to read questions 11 to 20 first.
Welcome to the library tour. We'll begin our tour of this level of the library here at the entrance. Then we'll go in a clockwise direction. So, first of all, over here on the left, next to the entrance, is a touchscreen information service. These computers can be used at any time to get general information about the library and how it works. In front of the touchscreen information service are the catalogues. As you can see, it's a computerised catalogue system and it's very easy to use. The catalogues are linked up to the other libraries at the university, so make sure you check which library a book is in when you are trying to locate a particular item. Next, along here on the left, we have the circulation desk for borrowing and returning books. The returns area, the place for returned books and other items, is at the end of the circulation desk, near closed reserve. Closed reserve, as most of you probably know, is a collection of books that are in high demand, so they are on restricted circulation. If a book is on closed reserve, you can only borrow it to use within the library for 3 hours at a time. Over there in the corner are the shelves for newspapers. The library has an extensive collection of local and international English language newspapers. They are kept on those shelves for 1 month and then stored elsewhere. As we continue on our tour, around to the right, this large central section is the reference section. Reference texts cannot be borrowed for use outside the library. They must be used within the library. All these shelves in the centre of this level are the reference section. Now, the stairs here on the left lead to level 2 only. On level 2 are most of the law books. To go up to the other levels of the library, you have to use a lift. Beside the stairs are the restrooms for this floor. Now, as we walk around this corner to the right, this large room on the left is the Audiovisual Resource Centre. You can come here if you wish to listen to a tape or watch one of the library's videos. Next to the Audiovisual Resource Centre is the photocopying room. There are 15 copiers for student use, and we've recently added a colour copier. The system for copying uses cards, not coins. You can buy a photocopy card from the technician in charge of the photocopying room or from the information desk if he isn't here at the time. On our right, these work tables are for student use, especially for small groups to work together. Or you and your colleagues can use the conference room, which is that small room there next to the lockers. You can work on group projects in the conference room without disturbing anyone, and there's a conference room on each level of the library. The round desk in front of the lockers is the information desk. If you need help using the catalogues or you need to organise a loan from another library, the information desk is the place to come. And finally, here, beside the exit doors, these two shelves contain current magazines and journals. Like the newspapers, they are kept here for a time and then stored elsewhere. Okay, that's the end of the tour of this level of the library. I'll leave you to look around yourselves now, and if you need any further help, please ask at the information desk.
That is the end of section 2. You will have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turn to section 3. Section 3. You will hear three students discussing a survey they are going to do. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 27. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 27.
Hi Mel, hi Laura, sorry I'm a bit late. I got held up by the bus, it just didn't come for ages.
Don't worry, you're only a couple of minutes behind and we've only just been chatting.
Right then, we're here to organise the survey that we're going to do. Mel, you said that you discussed with Professor Donald Walker what type of survey we were going to do.
Yes, I spoke to Professor Walker 2 days ago, and I told him that the surveys we were considering were a telephone survey, a street survey, and a mail survey. He thought that the phone one would be too expensive for us, and the postal one would take too long, so we decided we should do the street one.
I think that's right. If we do the street one, then we can get the whole thing done in one day, and we can get on with analysing the results.
Yes, that's right. Now, there are some other things that Professor Walker wanted to know about. How big should the survey be?
Well, the ideal figure for a survey such as this should be about 1,000 people, but that will take us about a month to get that many people, and we just don't have that much time. On the other hand, if we just choose 100 people, the survey won't be statistically significant.
So, what about something in the middle? What about 600?
Still too many. That'll take us ages. 400?
Let's split the difference and say 500.
Okay.
And how many questions? If there are too many, we'll just have the same problem.
Professor Walker said we should have no more than 10 or people get bored. 10 then?
I think even fewer. 8.
I think 3 fewer again to make sure we can get the numbers done quickly.
Okay, I agree with that.
I'm not sure, but I suppose so.
You now have some time to look at questions 28 to 30. Now listen to the rest of the discussion and answer questions 28 to 30.
Now, Professor Walker asked where we were going to do the survey.
Does he want to avoid that area then?
Probably. Now, we can either all stay together or split up and do different locations.
Well, if we split up, then I think we've got a better chance of getting more people surveyed.
Yes, I agree with Laura.
Okay. Now, I made a list of the possible locations in Westleigh where we could station ourselves. There's the town square, at the entrance to the train station, at the university cafeteria, outside Dobbin's department store, on the corner of the High Street and College Road, the bus station and the corner of High Street and Wilkins Road. What do you think?
I think the square is great, but the people at the train station will be travelling and often in a hurry.
I agree with all of that, and I think the bus station will have the same problem as the train station.
Okay, that's those two out then.
I think the other ones in town were good too. The cafeteria will have too many students, and that will create too great a bias to our survey. We need a good cross-section of the population, and anywhere too close to the university won't give us that.
Laura's right. So, out of the other town ones, I think that the two on the High Street corners are good.
I don't agree. The High Street corner with College Road would be good, but the corner with Wilkins Road is too far out. Not enough people will come by there.
Yes, Mel's right there. We should use Dobbin's department store instead.
I can see your point. Okay, that's settled then. All three of us will be stationed in town then, but not the Wilkins Road position.
That is the end of section 3. You will now have half a minute to check your answers.
Section 4. You are going to listen to a student, Liz, giving a seminar presentation on advertising. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Listen to the talk and answer questions 31 to 40. Today, Liz is going to give her presentation. Liz?
For my presentation, I looked at the different forms of advertising, especially at how women are portrayed by the media.
So, Liz, tell us what different forms of advertising you looked at.
As you can see from the outline on the screen, I looked at a wide variety of different medias, including billboards, television ads, newspapers, and, of course, the internet. Oh, yes, I almost forgot. I also looked at films.
And what was your main finding?
Well, I've brought some samples in to show everyone, which I hope will make it a little clearer. But first of all, I'd like to take a look at this first advert, which is from, believe it or not, a popular women's magazine. Now, even though this is a women's magazine, as you can see, women are portrayed in what we might call a submissive role. That is to say, they are always the ones doing the housework, going shopping, or caring for the baby. In fact, you may notice that most adverts concerned with household products, such as cleaning materials, as well as food and baby items, are generally directed at women. Another thing you may notice about the women is that they are nearly always very slim and beautiful, even middle-aged women. None of them are ever shown to be poorly dressed or to be overweight.
So, Liz, how are men normally portrayed in these adverts?
Well, if you take a look at the next picture, which is in fact from the same magazine, you will notice that men are seen to be strong, powerful, and in charge. They give the image of being in charge, being the ones who make the decisions. And generally, they are dressed either in sports clothes, showing their prowess or fitness, or a business suit, which serves to depict their social status.
You mentioned that you also looked at films. Do these same images apply to the movie industry?
Yes, they do indeed. And again, I have some images to show you. This time, however, I've arranged the pictures so that you can see clearly the different roles that men and women play in the films. Notice, first of all, that it is the man who is in charge. He's the one driving a big, luxurious car and constantly contacting the office on his mobile phone. Now, if we look over here to the women, we see she is subservient to the man. She's his secretary, in fact. And if we take a look at her office, we see it's shared by other women and open to the public. In contrast, her boss's office, who is the man, of course, has a very large, spacious office all to himself. And if the woman wants to enter, she first has to get his permission. That is to say, she has to first of all knock at the door and wait until he invites her to enter. However, if the man wants to talk to the woman, he simply picks up the phone and requests her attention.
Are there any images where women are not shown to be of a lower social status to men?
No, there aren't. Well, very few, in fact. There are, of course, times when the woman, for example, is playing the part of a scientist with a man as her assistant. Yet even here, she is not in a position to make decisions. Decisions, in fact, are still made by her boss, who, of course, is a man. In other less extreme conditions, such as we can see here, the woman is playing the role of a housewife and mother, while her husband goes out to work to earn the money. In other words, the man is seen to have more control over the situation than the woman, who has to rely upon her husband for her livelihood.
So, how far do you think this reflects real life?
That's hard to say, because generally women do tend to do more housework and cooking than men. It is generally accepted that women are better able to care for children. But the problem is that we are told through the media that women are not as capable or as strong as men, that women are not as able as men, to make important decisions. This, of course, is totally untrue. Many women are at least as capable as men at making decisions. More so in some cases.
Are women ever seen in the media to be superior to men?
Very rarely, in fact. And when they are seen to be better or faster or stronger than men, they are also seen to be a freak. You know, someone with superhuman powers. In other words, they are not seen to be an ordinary person like you or me.
Why do you think that is?
It's probably because if people know it's too ridiculous to be true, then they are not going to believe it. This way, it won't harm men's image.
So, what's the internet like?
In fact, I think the internet is probably the worst of all the media. I don't know why exactly, but I think it's probably because there is little or no control over the internet. Instead, the internet is seen as a type of no man's land, if you like. That is to say, it's not actually owned by one person or one company. Therefore, people are free to put whatever information on the internet they want.
So, would you say that information on the internet should be censored?
I think there should be some control over the internet, because some of the images are dangerous.
Dangerous?
Yes, indeed. For adults, I guess it's not such a big problem because mature people are able to decide for themselves what to believe and what not to believe. But children are a different matter. They accept information that is presented to them without questioning that information or considering the consequences of believing it. In other words, children believe what they see or what they are told.
And how do other people feel about information on the internet?
Actually, I carried out a survey to find out other people's opinions. As you can see from this chart, the majority of people over the age of 28 were in favour of restricting the information. It was only people under the age of 20 who really thought that information shouldn't be censored. In fact, only about 8% said that information on the internet should be restricted in some way.
Well, thank you, Liz. That was a very interesting topic. And I'm sure that if any of you have any questions, Liz would be more than happy to answer them. That is the end of section 4. You will have half a minute to check your answers.